It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Breaking news evidence suggests that the President of the United States and the Director of the Department of Homeland Security knowingly lied, defamed Border Patrol agents, accusing them of strapping, of whipping Haitian migrants 1 year ago. What today should we hear from Border Patrol? It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? And welcome to Friday. In an absolutely stunning turn of events, stunning in terms of a revelation, a Freedom of Information Request Act by Heritage and published by Judicial Watch revealed internal emails at the federal government's highest levels that suggest Alejandro Mayorkas and perhaps President Joe Biden knowingly lied to the American people about our Border Patrol. Those emails reveal that 2.5 hours before Alejandro Mayorkas took to a podium to address the American people, he received an email from one Maria Espinoza. She's the assistant secretary of DHS's Office of Public Affairs. In that email, she lays out that there is no evidence that points to the agents whipping or strapping illegal immigrants. She recounts testimony from the photographer who took those now infamous photos of Border Patrol turning back Haitian migrants. And that photographer says he saw no whipping. He saw no strapping. That email was received 2.5 hours again before the press conference where Alejandro Mayorkas said those images were horrifying, that they were further evidence recalling America's systemic racism and injustice. He maligned the character of those Border Patrol agents. He indicted the soul, yet again, of a nation. And he flat out, along with the President of the United States, lied to the American people. Today we will talk to the Border Patrol's union chief, the National Border Patrol Council President, Brandon Judd, about his reaction in defense of his three agents on the ground and one supervisor who have been tied up in disciplinary action for a year over this lie. But first, Will's picks of the week. Last week, I went 2-3, running my season record to 11-13-1 against the spread. It's better than my fantasy football record, as I have owned with you. I am 0-5. I can barely even say it. 0-5. 0-5 in the Fox and Friends Fantasy Football League. My betting picks are better, and I'm willing to bet you that I end up over 500, in essence, in the black, in essence, making money before the season is over. Let's get it right this week. Here are my picks of the week. Oklahoma State is traveling to Fort Worth to take on TCU, and TCU is giving up 4 points. TCU favored by 4. Give me the Cowboys. Give me Oklahoma State. Give me their quarterback, Spencer Sanders. I know that TCU's hot, and I know they're rolling, and I know I've missed picking against TCU, but I got to think this magic comes to an end for their quarterback, Max Duggan. At some point, I think Oklahoma State is the odds-on favorite to win the Big 12. We'll see about Texas before this whole thing is said and done. But I like Oklahoma State plus 4 in this game against TCU. USC traveling to Utah late Saturday night. Utah giving up 3.5 points at home. I like Utah. I think we're dealing with an overrated, underrated situation. Utah's lost 2 games, but close games. Their quarterback's good. He's thrown integral picks. I don't think that's who he is. I think he's good, Cam Rising. I think Utah still was my preseason pick to go to the college football playoffs. That's not going to happen. But I don't think they're going to give up in terms of winning the Pac-12. I don't think they're going to give up in terms of taking on everybody's darling, Cinderella, if not Cinderella, definitely darling, in USC. So give me Utah giving up 3.5 points. And then finally, in probably the big game of the weekend, Alabama is traveling to Tennessee, and Alabama is giving up 7.5 points. Not 100% sure who's going to play quarterback for Alabama. Bryce Young, Jalen Milroe, but I really like Tennessee, and I like them even more at home, and I like them even more at home and getting 7.5 points. Tennessee can score. They can move the ball. They are not Texas A&M. I lost on that pick last week, taking Alabama minus 24.5. Now, Texas A&M can play D, and Tennessee doesn't play defense in the same fashion, but Texas A&M can't play offense, and oh, can Tennessee. I think Tennessee is going to win this game outright. I definitely like them getting 7.5 points. On to pro football, Denver Broncos going to Los Angeles, the SoFi Stadium, to take on the Los Angeles Chargers. The Chargers are giving up 5.5 points. Man, I hate betting on the NFL. You don't know what's going to happen week to week, who's good, who's bad. I mean, I think the Broncos stink, but I'm not quite ready to say that Russell Wilson absolutely stinks. I don't know if you've seen these stats. He's really bad going down the field. Like, the pass is over 20 yards, below 50% completion. And he got his praises sung for so many years, being that guy. I'm sure Russell Wilson's going to step up and have a game, and he's going to prove people wrong. And it's the NFL. They'll make you feel like a fool week to week. But I just like the Chargers. And they're more consistent. I like Justin Herbert. I like him so much, I'll give up 5.5 at home and take the Chargers against the Broncos. And then, in the game of the weekend, Buffalo Bills at the Kansas City Chiefs. And the Chiefs getting 3 points. The Chiefs at home getting 3 points. Huh. I mean, this is tough. These are the two best teams in the AFC. And I really like the Bills. But Mahomes just has a way of making you a fool. I think he is undefeated as an underdog. And he's an underdog here at home. I think the Bills are the better team, the better all-around team. But I don't think I can pick against Patrick Mahomes getting 3 points at home. Give me the Chiefs, plus 3. There's your picks of the week. The Chiefs, the Chargers, Utah, Utes, Oklahoma State Cowboys, and the Tennessee Volunteers. Now, to our story of the week. Here is the National Border Patrol Council President Brandon Judd on the breaking news evidence this week that DHS and the White House lied to the American people about their characterization of Border Patrol's agents whipping Haitian migrants. Here's Brandon Judd.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
National Border Patrol Council President Brandon Judd, I'm glad to have you on the program today, and I'm very interested to hear your reaction to the news this week that 2.5 hours before Alejandro Mayorkas took to the stand and repeated the podium and repeated the idea that Border Patrol agents were whipping Haitian migrants some 1 year ago. We now know, thanks to Judicial Watch and Heritage, that he was told 2.5 hours before he went to that podium by a Maria Espinoza, who's the Assistant Secretary of Public Affairs, that there was no whipping, that the photographer who took those infamous photos reported not seeing anything like strapping, according to Joe Biden, or horrific images of 1800 slavery as repeated by Alejandro Mayorkas. With that knowledge, Brandon, what's your reaction?
Oh, I can't tell you how upset I am right now. It is extremely despicable that he would know this information, that he would withhold it from the American people. That clearly shows that this administration, including Alejandro Mayorkas, does not care that the American people have all of the facts, that they're able to formulate their own opinions based upon the truth. He wants to just, he wanted to inflame all of those people that were already upset about what those images supposedly portrayed. He had information, that information was pertinent information, and by withholding that information, he lied to the American people. And lying to the American people, that makes him, in my opinion, that makes him ineligible to be the Secretary of Homeland Security. He perjured himself. That is high crimes and misdemeanors. That is an offense that could be impeachable. And I think that if the Republicans take back the House in November, I think that they should impeach him.
There we go. You think the fallout from this should be that Mayorkas loses his job, that he should be impeached?
You should have to, as the president of the United States or a cabinet level official, you should have to tell the American public the truth. And if you withhold information, if you're not telling the American, if you're not telling the American people everything, then you're lying to them. And that, yes, perjuring yourself, that should be impeachable.
Well, let me tell you something, Brandon. If we start down that road, there's going to be a lot of government officials and many departments that will need to be impeached. We also learned this week from the Pfizer CEO that they knew that the vaccine did not stop transmission. And yet we had numerous government officials going out there saying this would stop the virus. But I'm not going to expand our topic selection, just to point out that if lying is impeachable, there is a whole host of people that need to get in line to be fired. Now, back to Mayorkas and your issue, though. What does it make your Border Patrol agents think and feel to know this is how it went down 1 year ago?
Will, when I put on the uniform, I go out there to try to serve and protect the American people. That's what we want to do. When we go out and patrol the border, that's all any law enforcement officer wants to do, is to protect their fellow citizens. And this makes it nearly impossible, because what it tells us is that if we do our job and if we do our job right, we're going to be subject to the whims of the American media. We're going to be subject to social media. And if social media goes in the favor of what the administration wants, those policies they want, they're going to come out and they're going to attack us. And not just attack us, but they actually went after these agents' careers. They affected their careers. They were put on administrative duties. They weren't allowed to patrol the border. They weren't allowed to have promotional opportunities. They weren't allowed to get the training that was necessary to ultimately promote. All of those different things, their careers effectively were stopped. And even though I am very confident that my attorneys are going to be able to exonerate them completely, and I'm positive that their personal files will be cleared, this is going to be a taint on them, because the president of the United States himself accused them of a criminal act. And then on top of it, you had the secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, a confirmable position by the Senate, that also echoed those comments and made it appear like they did something wrong. It is monstrous what they did.
I know, Brandon, that this is still wrapped up in some investigation, some still fallout on how this will affect these agents' careers. But I have to ask you, I would love to ask you and learn as many details as we can about what actually happened that day 1 year ago. First, just a couple of facts and details as we go through this. How many agents are we talking about that were, in essence, and I will editorialize here, but defamed by the Department of Homeland Security? How many agents are the subject of this investigation?
There were three agents that were on scene, and then there was a supervisor who was not on scene, who also got a disciplinary proposal. But let's set the stage here. This was the largest illegal immigration event in the history of the United States. There were 10,000 people at this time. There were 10,000 people that were camped out under a bridge. We've never seen anything like that again in the history of the United States, not just during this administration, but in the history of the Border Patrol. 10,000 people. These people were to their backs. These agents were sent out and they were told, stop people from crossing the river. Do not allow any more people to cross the river to add to those numbers under the bridge. So they had 10,000 people to their back and several hundred people to their front. So they were trapped in between two very large groups. And we found out later, the intel was already there that this was a powder keg, that it could become very, very dangerous at any moment. That's why there were so many DPS officers on scene. And so they were trapped between two very, very large groups. You never put law enforcement in that particular situation. And on top of it, they were told to stop people from continuing to enter the country, which is exactly what they were doing. Now, of course, they're on horseback and you've got to control those horses. So as people are refusing to obey their lawful commands, and that's what was happening. These agents were giving people lawful commands and they were were refusing to obey them, the agent then had to cut them off, get in front of them. And that's where the whole Biden narrative of they were nearly running people over. They were doing exactly what they were told to do. They were not violating any laws. They were not violating any policies. What they ultimately came up with is they came up with the catch-all. Unprofessional conduct, which was the catch-all, and that's what they ultimately decided to try to discipline them on. Again, very monstrous when you consider the totality of the situation and that they were following all laws, all policies, and yet this administration still went after them.
Okay, a lot there I want to follow up on. So first of all, incredible scene setting that you just did, a highly dangerous situation with crowds of people on both sides of these Border Patrol officers with a specific instruction to turn back a mass migration event at the river. The horse-mounted Border Patrol agents, I assume, Brandon, is something that has some history to it, probably some policy written into how a mounted officer is to behave, how he is to use his horse. Tell me what that is. You said cutting them off. So if I am a Border Patrol agent, by the way, esteemed and honored, I think, to probably be in this unit where you can use, you know, horseback, what is the technique that is used in that moment?
Well, so this wasn't something that we normally do. This was more of a crowd control issue. Normally, we'll use the horses to try to track people and find them as they're trying to escape, evade apprehension. Then we'll get in front of them and then we'll take them into custody. In this particular case, what these agents were trying to do is they were trying to stay in front of them, try not to allow them to further their entry into the United States, which is exactly what they were told to do. So again, they're having to maneuver the horses to stay in front of those individuals while these individuals are trying to run around them. And that's what I mean by taking a
really
posture
quickly,
of trying to cut them off.
You say, and I can imagine it. Look, I've grown up in Texas. I've grown up around horses. I'm familiar with what a horse who is working to cut something off, be it livestock or a human being in crowd control, what that horse and rider looks like. And it looks like what we saw in those pictures. But I am curious because I want to see where the opposition will come from in this conversation. I am curious, Brennan, you said this is what they were told to do. Is that according to policy? That in certain situations, horses are used in this type of situation, or is that sort of a game day call from a superior? What I'm curious about, Brandon, is how far back can we go on this is standard procedure?
So there is nothing in the horse patrol policy that says that you cannot use your horses to stay in front of people or cut them off. There's nothing in the policy that says that you can't do that. And because of the game day, as you put it, the game day decision to send these horse patrol agents out to do this specific job, yes, they were doing everything within policy, everything within law. So there was no violation, no law, no policy violation. They did everything correct. But Will, it goes back to what the media was talking about. When they came out, look at what Secretary Mayorkas said the first day, the very first day, he was on the agent's side. Then as this continued to snowball and as the president made those false allegations of a criminal act, that's when Secretary Mayorkas changed his tune. And that's how we know that this is all political. That's how we know that all they were doing was feeding into what their base of support wanted them to say.
Where do you think that was coming from? I mean, it was certainly becoming a social media phenomenon driven by the most malevolent actors. Why do you think the administration, in one part with Joe Biden, took it and ran with it, and another part with Alejandro Mayorkas, changed his tune and adopted that story?
Well, if all you have to do is look at the West Wing, look at the political appointees in DHS, they come from a lot of them come from activist backgrounds. These activists, they want open borders. They're pushing for open borders. All of this chaos that we continue to see, this is something that these individuals have been pushing for, and they've been pushing for a long time. If you look at what's currently happening on the border, we are seeing numbers that we have never seen before at this time of the this time of year, we should be apprehending anywhere between 30 to 40,000 people a month. 30 to 40,000 a month. We're at 200,000 people a month. And then on top of that, you look at the gotaways, you look at the amount of drugs that are coming into the United States, the fentanyl and the overdose deaths that are taking place in the United States. You would have thought early on that this administration would have put a stop to it, because there is a very simple fix to all of this that is currently taking place, but they haven't. They've allowed it to continue. So you have to then think about, well, look at the people that are in the White House. And then look at Joe Biden's comments himself when he says, I don't care what the people in the White House says, this is what I'm gonna do. It's clear that he's not in complete and total control of everything that is happening in government. And so you have to think that those activists that are in the White House, the activists that are in DHS, that they have a oversized voice in what's going on. And that's why I believe that we're currently seeing what we're seeing.
Yeah, and I think they're highly attuned to social media, in particular Twitter, and they saw this thing erupting on Twitter. So back to that moment 1 year ago, I am asking you questions that quite honestly are down the road. What I'm getting at is those questions about whether or not the horses were used in a proper way. I'm anticipating what may be the fight that is going on right now. And we'll come back to that in just a moment. But what the fight was a year ago wasn't about whether or not those horses were used in an improper fashion. It was whether or not those agents whipped Haitian migrants, whether or not they used their reins to, in Joe Biden's words, strap those illegal immigrants. Again, having grown up around horses and in Western culture, I know what a split rein is. I know what it is to have long reins. I know what it is to use the rein to direct the horse, you know, and if anything, if anything is being contacted by those reins, it would be the horse. But I'm curious, I have to ask directly, as you've been a part of this, and these are your Border Patrol agents, did any of those agents use those reins to strike a migrant? Was anybody
whipped? Absolutely not. They never use those in any sort of fashion like that. They use those reins solely to control that horse. That's all that they were doing. The images, obviously, these are still images, so you can't see as the reins continue to move on. But I was going to ask,
did they use those reins to direct the migrants? Meaning,
Did they use
the threat of being hit by those reins to redirect illegal immigrants?
Absolutely not. And the investigation concluded all of that. They concluded that nobody was struck. The investigation concluded that nobody, that they weren't using the reins to try to direct anybody. All they came back with was unprofessional conduct. That's all they came back with, because again, that was the catch-all that they could ultimately try to propose discipline on these agents for.
Yeah, okay. And Brandon, that's the looking forward part that I just mentioned, asking about where the horse is used in some improper fashion, because it has evolved, as you mentioned, and I am aware, into quote unquote unprofessional conduct. So I walk through the reins with you. I walk through the usage of the horse with you. What then, Brandon, is the evidence, or where do they stand on that these Border Patrol officers were acting unprofessionally? In what fashion?
They were saying that by using the horses to try to cut these individuals off, they put these individuals in danger. They also said that one agent used unprofessional language when one of the Haitian adult males put a female and child in front of him in the river. Now, I want to paint this scene for you as well. This river has already taken the lives of hundreds of people. Had that woman or child fallen into the river, had they have slipped, that agent would have then been required to go in the river and try to save those individuals. And he would have gladly done that, but it would have put his life in danger. And that Haitian adult male put that woman and child in danger. So yeah, the emotions were high. And so he did, he said, that's how you treat your women and children in your shithole country. Excuse my language,
something like that,
but that's what he said.
Okay. Yes, is that exactly what he said?
I believe that's exactly what he said. You know, no wonder you're leaving your country. That's how you treat your women and children in your shithole country. Again, think about how emotions were high. Think about how he wants to ensure that women and child doesn't get in trouble or doesn't put their lives in danger. And yet that male did exactly that. But we didn't prosecute that individual. We didn't prosecute that individual for putting those two lives in danger. Instead, we go after the agents for trying to do the best that they possibly could for these individuals.
And then what's the allegation on unprofessional use of the horses, that you could have trampled the migrants?
Yes, that's exactly it. Yep.
Yep. And then, okay, and so what's the potential punishment for those three agents?
So they've already been proposed disciplinary actions. I can't disclose what that is because that's with the attorneys, but they have been proposed disciplinary action. So what we're doing right now is we're going through the process. Those agents now have the right to respond to the proposal that they've been given. My attorneys will then go through and go through all of the evidence and clearly show that the agency is wrong in proposing this discipline.
And how long, this has been ongoing for a year, Brandon, how much longer does this drag out for your agents?
So this is something, so the agents are back on duty now because it did come out that they did not commit any criminal offense, but they had to sit on administrative duties for all of that time while the investigation. So the investigation has concluded, and the investigation concluded that they did nothing criminal. There was nothing in their actions that was criminal. They're saying that it was a policy violation. The unprofessional conduct was a policy violation. So now that's something they get to respond to, and we will. We will vigorously defend these individuals' agents. But now that that investigation is wrapped up, they are back on duty.
You know, Brandon, there's a famous, I believe it was communist saying that, show me the man, I'll show you the crime. So in other words, I'll find something. Just show me who I need to find something on.
That's exactly
it. This entire conversation that we're having about unprofessional conduct is making a case after the case. What I'm getting at is the real story is the story you and I began within this conversation. And that is, your agents were defamed as participating in some type of racist, violent act reminiscent of plantation life in the 1800s, having whipped black Haitian illegal immigrants. That is what was alleged. That was what Biden suggested. That's what Mayorkas repeated. And that is what your agents are stuck with in public consciousness. I think I need to establish this with you for the record. What are the races of those three agents?
Well, those three agents happen to be Caucasian. I'm sorry. One of those agents was Hispanic. So you got two Caucasians, you got one Hispanic, and then the supervisor is Hispanic.
So out of the four that have been disciplined, two Hispanic and two Caucasian.
Correct. Correct.
And this picture has been painted that those four individuals then become symbolic. They become the image of a systemically, and I believe Mayorkas used these exact words, a systemically racist country in the United States of America.
Yes, he did.
How are your agents? There was also a famous saying from New York in the 1970s, I believe, where a public figure said, "What department do I go to get my reputation back?" Where do your agents go to get their reputation back?
There's no way you can get your reputation back. Those images are already out there, and they've already painted in that way. So everybody can tie those images to those faces and figure out who those agents are very, very easily to do. It's very easy to do that. There's no way you can get your reputation back from here. Now, I will say that once this is all over, once the proposal is over, we will then take whatever action is allowable under law to try to make them as whole as we possibly can. Whether that's getting them another job in another organization, another law enforcement organization, to take them out of the Border Patrol. We are going to do everything that we possibly can to make these agents whole. But Will, it doesn't matter. This will be with them for the rest of their lives. Their children are going to have to listen to how President Biden accused them of systemic racism. They're going to have to listen. Their children are going to have to listen to how their fathers tried to whip these individuals that were violating our laws. It's going to stay with them forever, Will.
And we now know that the people making those statements knew very well that that was not the truth. We have the evidence.
Yes.
I spoke to a plaintiff's attorney friend of mine, Brandon, who said, this isn't the gun. This is not the smoking gun. This is the gun firing. So to see these emails, to know, and of course, there's always going to be somebody that complete ignorance. I didn't see the email. I'm sure you can find out if an email is read or not. And it's impossible to think that people at that level of government would take to a public relations podium without seeing an email that was sent on a current news story within 3 hours. Did not see this information. Well, with that in mind, what my attorney's friend estimates that this is tech, in his words, textbook defamation. Do you know, Brandon, will your agents sue Mayorkas, Biden, so for defamation?
The problem with that is federal laws are very, very difficult, especially when you're a federal employee. It's very difficult to then turn around and sue the government when you're doing a job for the federal government. So there's a lot more laws that we're required to follow that a normal U.S. citizen would not have to follow, that they wouldn't be subject to. So we're subject to a lot more restrictions on us in how we can hold the government accountable. But we're going to look for everything that we possibly can. We're just going step by step first. We're going to resolve the disciplinary proposal first, and then we're going to look at everything else that we can do for them.
You used a word here at the end. I'll say I agree. To know the truth and to repeat a lie and to throw individuals' reputation under the bus and possibly their career and to possibly put them into physical danger is absolutely monstrous. I really appreciate you jumping on with me, Brandon, and laying out the facts of this case and where you guys are 1 year later and what it feels like here as you get this evidence that this didn't have to go down the way it went down. Thank you so much, Brandon Judd.
Well, I appreciate you covering this. Thank you.
There you go. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Brandon Judd. As always, please share this podcast everywhere. It's a growing community. I hope you will tell your friends about it. Hope you'll send them the link, send them the pod, text them, tell them at the weekend barbecue, tell them at the party, leave a comment online, leave a rating online. I will appreciate it. I'll see you again on Monday.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.